With its ambitious objectives in terms of energy transition and in the context of strong global competition, the necessity for the European Union to reach strategic self-sufficiency for raw materials seems to be a new political consensus. But this green transition and EU's climate agenda requires lots of critical raw materials that are imported from different parts of the world and soon from Europe. But what about the respect of planetary boundaries? Is it possible to reuse critical raw materials instead of opening new mines? Therefore, is it necessary to be more innovative in the circular economy? In general, can the European Commission assess its legislative proposals not only for their impact on climate, but also on biodiversity and toxic pollution? This is what we will discuss in today's podcast, the second of our series under the branding of European States of Mind Reinventing the Deal. In French, L'Union dans tous ses États, réinventer le deal. And today we have a very special guest, Sirpa Pietikäinen. Hello and welcome, Sirpa.
Hello, very glad to be your guest today.
Thank you so much for accepting our invitation. You have been a member of the European Parliament since 2008 within the European People's Party Group, EPP, and you were before that a member of the Finnish Parliament for more than 20 years, as well as an environmental minister. And now, to begin with some key aspects of your blog, I would like to talk about the proposal from the European Commission for Critical Raw Materials. It was supposed to be an answer to reach that strategic autonomy, but it has sparked a lot of controversy, particularly regarding the expedited permitting process for new mining projects. So, in your view, what are the risks, and the environmental and social impacts of fast-tracking these mining projects?
Thank you for questioning this. Usually, if you look the question in silos, you probably do not get the right answer. It's a bit, you would need to have the whole system approach. It's a bit like cooking a fish soup. If you just argue in which order to cook the potatoes and onions and fish, use a lot of time, and then you end up cooking potatoes and tomatoes and probably the fish, but not any garlic. You notice that this is not the fish soup, so this is not sustainable. Then you end up pouring all the ingredients in the same place, and still it doesn't taste, and it's not like the fish. And this metaphor describes very well this great paradigm change. It's a Copernican change to sustainability. We are still doing the same things, basically, same, but more. And where that leads is actually frustration, because going faster but to the wrong direction actually does not help. This is why, firstly, we shouldn't look any issues as climate only. We've seen with the palm oil issue, for example, and forest issues where this leads to. If you put the other ecosystem services and planetary boundaries on the secondary place or not even consider them. So you sort of push the consequences, and sometimes they are even worse, to other environmental sectors. And secondly, by making wrong investments, you end up losing the time what you would need to consume on the right direction. Okay, how this goes in the mines? It's a bit the same that there was with the efficacy of diesel cars. You didn't turn to a new technology and thinking. You thought, okay, if we just tweak the diesel, it'll be the perfect answer. With the fossil fuels, no. It won't. And neither is the old-fashioned way of batteries and technologies for solar and wind and renewable energies and other techniques. So what would you need to do? Firstly, look all the consequences. Check that there's no significant harm in any other fields. And look what are the new possibilities and avenues on innovation. Let me pick up only two examples, and it is the solid state salt, so natrium batteries. And actually, five car marks have it already in China in production. And this is coming fastly, like is the new innovations from the bioenergy, use lignin from the wood on producing batteries. and so forth and so forth. So now we have a huge rush to put a lot of lithium mining, and even in the nature conservation areas. And we know how long it takes to put the mine in the place, how it's going to be at least 5 up to 10 years before it is in full production. It produces something for 20, 30 years, and then you have all the waste and all the problems, destroyed biodiversity. And if you think the alternative uses, you could use it for forestry, for recreation, for tourism, for food production, for biodiversity-based medicine, for other indigenous uses, and shall I continue? And with this kind of a sustainable use, you can use hundreds and hundreds of years the forest, for example, and that goes for the lakes, and that goes for the land. But if you mine a huge mine, and we have the examples in Poland and Germany and all over the world, that's the end of the story. And of course it changes over the time, but it's not going to be ever the same nature. So why do we rush making solutions on the name of strategic autonomy when we have not explored the other possibilities, firstly? And secondly, when we have not explored the new technologies, and the new technologies in Europe and globally needs to be from more abundant materials, not causing significant harm, and to be totally designed out of the waste in closed loop. And this was what I was trying to propose for the regulation. You need to set this kind of a future-proof testing first. Secondly, a proper environmental impact analysis that takes into account the other uses. You need to first make a proof that you have created perfect, as far as possible, closed loops of the existing materials, like lithium, for example. We are far, far from that. And how you expand the longevity of the goods, that is another story. And then, if those all boxes are ticked, then only you could go for the mining, but they would need to be closed mines with total retake of the materials, no waste principle, no emissions, so closed loop water and air pollution treatment. And that would be totally different kind of a cost. That would be the real cost of those materials. And then, if you pass all these tests, and if you really can't find any other replacement materials, maybe after then 15 years, we should go after these huge scale mining attempts in Europe. And that we don't do. And I'm so saddened of this proposal and the fact that it went through, and especially with so special hurry that actually I doubt if we all had proper time to really get familiar what is proposed on the way.
There is a need to look at all the planetary boundaries when we draft policies. So what role do you see for the European Commission and the European Parliament in addressing these broader environmental challenges beyond the climate action?
Well, the European Commission, as a guardian of the treaties and the EU values, should have this kind of a system view, what I was talking about. They should have the process in place to look at the different aspects. And for example, the problem here was that this was totally introduced without any preparation by the DG Environment. So this was purely industry policies. And this is the silos, what I was meaning. And then, because these are bigger than life challenges, as we all know, that we are facing, it should be on the responsibility of the president of the commission. And we should have a independent science panel, besides the commission, parliament and council, that evaluates these kind of a critical big decisions that we make, and to give the science advice, firstly, and secondly, to evaluate the proposals by the Commission and decisions by the Parliament and Council, if they are going to right or wrong direction. And I really do hope that the next Commission could reach this target.
In your blog, you also explained that this transition to a circular economy, investing in innovation, it's not only about environmental sustainability, but that there are also real economic reasons and benefits. Can you elaborate on that, on those benefits?
This is very interesting, because actually what is interesting is that if we put all of our efforts, for example, on making our houses and estates and constructions and buildings to be more modular and reusable and refittable and upgradable, that means that that would mean a lot of new work instead of demolishing and putting the new elements on place. Putting the renovation wave, putting the renewable energies, creating the logistics for the material reuse, creating the new technologies, creating the whole sort of a system of circular economy means a lot of work. The quality of circular economy jobs are higher than other the previous. For example, you might be dealing as waste truck driver. Then if you are management of a resource or reuse material circulation, is better paid, it's cleaner, and it is more pleasant work than the previous. And the same goes to different installations, reuse and industrial processes in planning. Plus then people find them more meaningful. So this really can mean economic benefits, and there are a lot of studies about that also, that it creates new jobs, new innovations, new businesses, new possibilities for export markets. Also, Michael Porter, the famous strategist and business person, has said that always when you make a circular economy or environmental improvement in products, you make other innovations as well. So it means that the goods are better than the previous ones. And maybe this is clear with the electric cars. They are not worse to drive than the old diesel cars.
You are part of the EPP, the biggest party of the parliament, but also a party that is more and more conservative, especially when it comes to climate, biodiversity or agriculture. So do you feel isolated with your strong opinions on the environment, or do you get support?
Well, now you are, as you know yourself very well, touching very sensitive points. I'm trying to do the best what I can. Let me underline that not only from the EPP, I've graduated from the Helsinki School of Economics and Business Administration, and I've been serving in company boards, so forth. So this sort of understanding how the business works and the profitability and the competition challenge is more than familiar to me. So it is not question of this kind of a green dream. It is a question of a necessity that we all know that we are facing with the planetary boundaries. Okay, then why do some of my colleagues be so skeptical and not joining the movement? It's basically that everybody in EPP wants to be in favor for business, especially those people that are really not familiar with the business. And quite often those ones complaining over the change are those ones that are not that good in the business, if we are frank. Because those ones that are good in the business are busy making the business and sort of taking up the challenges what they need. So there's a lot of negative, old-fashioned, unprofessional lobbying towards businesses in EPP, and that's part of the dilemma. I think that the solution would need to be that we would have in the future more positive lobbying, that those businesses that see the future, get the bigger picture and know the need for change, would open their mouths, would come up and speak with the EPP members and help to convince them that this is the way, and trying to speed up towards the wall is not going to be a very very good strategy. But yes, it is very challenging issue, and especially this goes to agriculture, that is extremely conservative area. And so I hope from the next parliament that there are this kind of enlightened people in EPP and in other parties, of course, that know what are the challenges, and so that this is not time for populism. And I hope that you all who listen this could sort of be part of the positive campaigning, sort of asking your friends and people you know to vote, be it whatever pro-European, pro-change, pro-environment, sustainability, people in different parties, because the totalitarianism, populism, just saying no is the real threat for future for our children, probably for ourselves already, and the whole future of us. I think that the Green Deal too is necessity, but that is totally a different thing. Do you call it Green Deal too, or do you call it something else? Because in EU we have a tendency to reframe the needed action if the old one has gotten a bit too bad reputation, and that's why it might have a political challenges to be accepted.
Thank you so much, Sirpa, and thank you for also these positive words and some hope. I remind the auditors that you are a member of the European Parliament and that you are a former Finnish Environment Minister, and that your full blog is accessible on the IDRIS website. And this series of podcasts, European States of Mind Reinventing the Deal, continues in the weeks to come, so stay tuned.
Thank you very much.